So good to be here. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. I forgot that story till you started to tell it, and then all of a sudden it came back to me. But as I saw your family sitting here and Brian's family back there, I thought about how I've never been blessed with biological children, but somehow God has chosen to bless me with a lot of other children. And I thought about what John said in, I don't know, 1st or 2nd or 3rd John. He said, I have no greater joy than to see that my children walk in peace or something like truth. Truth, yeah. And it's just gives me a lot of joy to see how God has taken you. And you did level out and still love God. So that's a good thing. It's really good to be here this morning and to fellowship with you. What I want to talk about this morning is something that has become more dear to me in the last couple of years. And I titled what I'm going to talk about, The Sabbath Was Made for Man. And I hope that if you forget everything else I say this morning, you'll remember that Sabbath was made for man. Sabbath was made for you. Sabbath is only the means toward an end, and that end is man's highest good. I don't know what Sabbath, when you hear the word Sabbath, I don't know what comes to your mind. If you look at a definition in the dictionary, it might say something like rest from work or meaning interruption from work, to stop, to cease. It probably would say something about observance of the seventh day by the Jews as a day for religious observance, as a day of rest. It might also say something about it as a day of religious observance by Christians, as a day of rest and commemoration of the resurrection of Jesus. And it probably also says something to you. You probably have your own definition of what Sabbath is, or as Christians, we've come to call it Sunday. I want to say right now that we talked about freedom this morning, and I want there to be a lot of freedom in this, in what I'm going to share. And I'm going to share things from my experience. That doesn't mean that that's your experience. And freedom for me and Sabbath might be different than what it is for you. And that's good. That's the way it's supposed to be, because we're getting back again to what Jesus said, and that was that man was made for Sabbath. Sabbath wasn't made for man. But let me tell you a little bit about Sabbath in my growing up years. I was raised on a farm, and we had cows and chickens, and so there were certain things that needed to be done every day of the week. But for us, Sunday kind of started Saturday evening. And, I mean, this was about 100 years ago, so it was a little different than what it is now. You had to come to church in your very Sunday best. And so Saturday night, I remember polishing everybody's shoes, and everybody took a bath on Sunday night, and you studied your Sunday school lesson. And in our home, we didn't have dessert for most meals, but on Sunday, that was kind of a special day, and so we had dessert. And so sometimes Saturday, we'd be making some food for Sunday, and there was some preparation time, getting ready for Sunday. And Sunday morning, we're up and about, and cows, like I said, had to be milked, and the chickens fed, and all those kinds of things. And then we went off to church. And if it was a good Sunday, we either went to somebody's house for dinner, or somebody came to our house for dinner, or after dinner, we went to my cousin's house, or one of my friends came over. If it wasn't quite as good as Sunday, my mom would say something like, you know, your dad's been working really hard in the field, and thank you. And he really needs just some time to rest this afternoon. That wasn't as much fun. But But what she taught me through that was Sunday was for everybody. And sometimes what I wanted to do is what we did. Sometimes what Dad needed or what somebody else in the family needed was what took importance. We also would not go to the grocery store or any store for that matter. You didn't buy your gas on Sunday. You didn't go to a restaurant on Sunday because that would have made somebody else have to work, and you didn't do that. And some of you grew up 100 years ago, too. Yeah. So it didn't feel legalistic. It was just that was how we did it. And I love Sunday. And there were many, many good memories of things that we did on Sunday. But I think the best thing for me was that we didn't have to work. You didn't have to go out and pull the weeds. And yeah, you still had to wash the dishes, but those extra, you had some extra time to read and have a good time and be with friends. And so I loved Sunday. As I grew older and went on my own, there were a lot of things that changed. And today, if I need groceries on Sunday, I'll go and buy them. Or I will often go out for lunch. My childhood days, you would have never washed your laundry on Sunday. But I will do that. And so I've changed a lot in what I do or don't do or how I view Sunday. But in the last number of years, as life has become busier and busier and Saturday started to fade into Sunday, I started to realize that, you know what, I'm cheating myself from a day of rest. it's kind of all blending into one. And there's something felt wrong with that. And so when I was in grad school or college, I decided that, you know what, Sunday's a day of rest, so that means no term papers today. Or Sunday's a day of rest, so I don't do this, or I will do this. And there's a lot of freedom in that. There's a lot of freedom in knowing that God made a day of rest, and that he made it for us because he knew that we needed a time to unwind. We needed a change from life as we experience it 6 other days of the week. And so he said, it's good for you to take a rest. And the first place he talks about that is at the very beginning of the Bible, Genesis 2. Verses 2-3. It's at the end of creation, and he had finished everything he made. He looked at it, and he said it was really good. In fact, he said it was very good. And then chapter 2, verse 2. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Now, creating for him was just saying a word, and it happened. Doesn't sound like work, but he rested from that. And in my reading for this, I kept seeing how that what God's asking is that we take a day to recreate instead of create. And because that's what God did. He stopped creating to recreate. And maybe that'll be a good guide for you as you think about what can I do on Sunday, what can't I do, or what is going to be restful for me is think about recreating as opposed to creating. One of the next places where we read about Sabbath is in Exodus 16:21. This is the children of Israel are in the wilderness, and they need food. And so God tells them there's going to be manna. Every morning, there's going to be manna. And then as they gather the manna, manna disappears. Next morning, there's fresh manna. So starting in 21, he talks about what it's going to be like on Sunday or on the Sabbath. Each morning, everyone gathered as much as he needed, and when the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much, two omers for each person, and the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. Moses said, "This is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of rest and a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So bake what you want, boil what you want to boil, save whatever is left until morning." So they saved it till morning, as Moses commanded, and it didn't stink or get maggots on it. "Eat it today," Moses said, "because today is a Sabbath day to the Lord. You will not find any of it to gather, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any." And then goes on to say how some people went out to gather anyway, and they didn't have any, so that day they needed to go hungry. And Moses said again, "Bear in mind, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. Everyone is to stay where he is in the seventh day. No one is to go out." So the people rested on the seventh day. So something there that God really, really wanted these people to get. There is to be a day to rest. You aren't gathering all your tents and all your family and cattle together and heading through the wilderness. This is to be a day of rest, and you're not to gather anything. Then a few pages back, Exodus 20, 8 to 11. "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you or your manservant, your son or daughter, your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the seventh day and made it holy." So now it becomes a commandment. And he's saying, this is what you are supposed to do on the seventh day. Do all your work in 6 days. Seventh is for the Lord. Stop creating and recreate. Remember the years in Egypt when you were wandering in the wilderness. In Egypt when you were enslaved, and then later your years in the wilderness when you were wandering. Remember that. I think he's saying remember in the sense of don't forget. It's also in the sense of this is something you need to think about. This is something that you need to do. Sabbath has no parallel with any other ancient civilization. In fact, the Greeks thought the Jews were very, very lazy people. And it's like, why in the world would you take a day off? And so they termed them as very lazy people because the seventh day, they just rested. I was on a website that is written by, it's called Judaism 101. And this guy had some interesting things to say about Sabbath. He talked about how Christians think that it's just a restricted day where you can't do anything, but it's just really a precious gift from God. And it's a day of great joy, and it would start on Friday night, as the day went on, people would go home, they would prepare food, they would have this special little meal, and then they would go to the service, come home, eat the wonderful meal, and have family time, go to bed. Next morning, they go to another service, and just went through the whole day. It was all about family, it was all about focus on God and about rest, about visiting with friends. And he's saying, this is a very special day. And even though other civilizations didn't have a day like it, he thought that was was a pretty cool thing for them to have this time. Then Jesus comes along. And if you'll turn in your Bible to Mark, let me just get that quickly. Sorry, I've got too many papers here. Matthew 12, Jesus and his disciples are walking through the grain field on a Sabbath day. And Jesus, they're hungry, and so they pick some grain and they start to eat. And that gets the Pharisees going. What's going on here? You're not supposed to do that. Because by this time, Sabbath had kind of... It was kind of out of hand, and people were just so restricted. Like you could tie a string around one hand around your wrist if you could do it with one hand. If you could do a knot with one hand, you could, but you couldn't do it with two hands. Or you could help the ox out of the hole if it fell into a hole, but there was just all kinds of restrictions of things that you could not do on the Sabbath. You were restricted in so many, many ways. And it was just getting to be unbearable. And Jesus comes along with a statement that I just really, really love, and it's, man was not made for Sabbath. Sabbath was not made for man, but man was made for the Sabbath. I had it right the first time. Man was made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. The Sabbath was made for... Oh, my goodness. The Sabbath was made for man. So Jesus is saying, listen, guys, this is not about, I can't do this, I can't do that, I have to do this, I have to do that. I made this day for you. And I made this day for you because I know that you need to have time with me. I know that you get very, very busy and your lives get so full and you're going, and you think, I have to keep working because if I don't keep working, I won't get everything done. And that's not what he wanted. He made it for us to be able to say, you know what, the work isn't all done, but I'm not going to do it today. I'm going to do what is best for my relationship with God, for my relationship with my family. He does say that we should spend time with other believers, so he's not saying neglect relationships, but he's saying, this is not about a bunch of legalistic rules. I made this for you because I want you to be recreated. I want you to enjoy life. I want you to be able to fellowship with me. I made this as a holiday for you. Every week you get to have a holiday. Now, I know that probably some of you who are sitting here say, Sunday's not a holiday for me. For instance, Tim, it's probably not, Sunday probably is a work day for him because he's on the job today. And that's why I think he's also saying, let's not be legalistic about this. Maybe it's going to happen on Sunday, but maybe it's going to be on Monday, or maybe it's Friday. But I think the point he's trying to make is that we really, really do need to have that time. We need to have Sabbath. And he's given us all the permission, and he's saying, I made this for you. I want you to enjoy Sabbath. So, as you think about Sabbath and the reality of our world, some ways it doesn't seem very practical because we're so busy rushing around. And how in the world do you ever get your family together on Sabbath? And how do you ever get to do something that on Sabbath that everybody's going to enjoy? Because there's so much, and we'll never catch up. The family's scattered. And then on top of that, we have little things like this. A few weeks ago, I went to prison to visit a young man, and I had to fill out papers to get to see him, and went through this little room where you had to make sure your papers were right. You had to go through the metal detector. You had to lock up everything except your ID and what was the other thing? Oh, money for snacks. And then you were escorted to another building. And we got to the other building, and it was a large room, maybe about this size or a little bit larger. And in that room, there was just lots and lots of little tables and chairs, just little groupings all over the place where you would sit with the prisoner that you came to visit. And so I'm sitting there just looking around at all these people and wondering, what did they do? How did they get to be here? And then after a while, Aaron came out and got to talk to him. And the night before he was arrested, I had the privilege of leading him to Jesus. And it was really scary for me to think about, how's he doing now that he's there? And so to be able to sit across a little table from him and talk about it, how he was doing, and to hear how he was just the reason that one of his atheist friends came to know Jesus, was just so exciting for me. And so we were having this good conversation, and all of a sudden, as I looked around the room, it appeared that there's a lot of other good conversations that were going on. People were sitting there looking at people in the eye and talking to them. And it was just a nice, peaceful atmosphere there. And I mean, I'm not naive enough to think that everybody was having deep spiritual conversations, but people were actually looking at each other and talking to each other. And all of a sudden I realized there was no television blaring. Nobody had a cell phone or a tablet. They were just sitting there talking to each other. And it was, I haven't been in a room with 150 people for a long time in that sort of an atmosphere where they were just having interaction with each other that there wasn't a cell phone. And I need to say up front that I have a cell phone and I have a tablet and I have a laptop and I love them all and I hate them all. And so I'm not against technology, but I've realized that there's something that's so wonderful about actual conversations with people that made me leave saying, I need to take a Sabbath from this stuff more often. And I need to make a point of going to a meeting without my cell phone. Or I need to make a point of, just because you get a text doesn't mean I have to look who it's from. Or, you know, just to control that. Or to say, I've been on a computer all day at work. When I come home, I'm not reading any more email. Or I'm not doing whatever, because it's more fun to read a book sometimes. And so as you think about Sabbath, as you think about your family, maybe that's an area to think about. Sabbath from technology. And I'm not talking about forever and ever, but what if you would have 8 hours in one day where you would just actually talk to your family and wouldn't have that competition? There's a guy named Wayne Mollett who said, Because we do not rest, we lose our way. Poisoned by the hypnotic belief that good things come only through unceasing determination and tireless effort, we never truly rest. And for want of rest, our lives are in danger. Busyness makes us stop caring about the things that we really care about. Busyness makes us stop caring about the things we really care about. Or what about this one from Mark Buchanan? The worst hallucination busyness conjures is a conviction that I am God. All depends on me. How will the right things happen if I'm not pushing and pulling and watching and worrying? But you know what? We're not God. And he made us to need him. He made us to have fellowship with him. And stopping what we're doing, even though the work isn't finished, is just saying, you know what, I'm not God. I've worked really hard for 6 days, and I'm going to take a break. And I'm going to trust that God can do what he needs to do in that time with that stuff that didn't get done. And come Monday morning, I can pick it up again. And you know what? Sometimes when Monday morning comes, it doesn't even matter anymore. Or maybe somebody else did it. Or maybe you have fresh energy and you're ready to pick it up and to go with it. So learn to be like Jesus, who seemed to know how to fully engage. He fully was with people when he was with them. He was fully engaged in healing or preaching or teaching, whatever he was doing. But then he knew how to withdraw. He knew how to pull away and to have time with the Father. He knew how to engage and then disengage. And I think that's another thing that helps us with observing Sabbath, is that we're disengaging. And out of that comes fresh energy, improved in relationships, and what we need then to face the demands of the coming week. I know that some of what I shared may sound pretty idealistic, and it's like, yeah, you can say that. You're a single woman. You don't have 3 or 4 children who are needing your attention or that are going 7 different directions and just all those kinds of challenges. And you're right, I don't. And I know that it takes effort. But I think what I would like to challenge you with this morning is, why don't you just take some little baby steps in this thing and see what happens. And don't let it become legalistic, but let it be fun. The other week, it was a Sunday, and I knew that I really should be reading something on Sabbath because I had to prepare for this teaching. And then all of a sudden I thought, oh, that's not Sabbath if I'm working on my sermon. And so I decided instead I was going to read a fiction book. And that was so refreshing and so exciting to be able to just focus on that. And then I got back to preparation at another time. So for me, that was a little step. For me, that was another time. It would be fine for me to read a book on worship on Sunday. That's not a big deal. But the point is to think about, how can I untether to then get back again into the saddle and to do what God has for me. I'd like to just close with a story. It's called The Keeper of the Stream. There was once a town high in the Alps that straddled the banks of a beautiful stream. The stream was fed by springs that were as old as the earth and as deep as the sea. The water was clear like crystal. Children laughed and played beside it. Swans and geese swam on it. You could see the rocks and the sand and the rainbow trout that swarmed at the bottom of the stream. High in the hills, far away beyond anyone's sight, lived an old man who was the keeper of the springs. He had been hired so long ago that no one could remember a time when he wasn't there. He would travel from one spring to another in the hills, removing the branches or fallen leaves or debris that might pollute the water. But the work was unseen. One year, the town council decided they had better things to do with their money. No one supervised the old man anyway. They had roads to repair and taxes to collect and services to offer. Giving money to an unseen stream cleaner had become a luxury they could no longer afford. So the old man left his post. High in the mountains, the springs went untended. The twigs and the branches, and worse, muddied the liquid flow. Mud and silt compacted the creek bed. Farm waste turned parts of the stream into stagnant bogs. For a time, no one in the village noticed. But after a while, the water wasn't the same. It began to look brackish. The swans flew away to live elsewhere. The water no longer had a crisp scent that drew the children to play by it. Some people in the town began to grow ill. All noticed the loss of the sparkling beauty that used to flow between the banks of the streams that fed the town. The life of the village depended on the stream, and the life of the stream depended on the keeper. The city council reconvened, the money was found, the old man was rehired. After yet another time, the springs were cleared, the stream was pure, the children played again on the banks. Illness was replaced by health, the swans came home, and the village came back to life. The life of the village depended on the health of the stream. The stream is your soul, and you are the keeper. The Sabbath was made for man. If you can come back again tonight, what I would like to do is to continue with this theme, but it's going to be a family time or a couple time, or it's also going to be a time for individuals to think about what is it going to look like for you to be a keeper of your stream. So I hope you can come back. Thank you.